Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Stretch Goose Podcast. It is episode 82. I'm flying solo again, but we're not going to have the episode we had the last time where I just played a bunch of clips and had fun. But we're going to kind of go back to the movies, the sports, the video games, and some news. But before we do all that, you know, we got that contest going around for the intro to the podcast. You must get those entries in by the 17th of January. And you have to have about a minute's worth of music. And it's got to have the Stretch Goose Podcast name in it. And your prize is notoriety and a song credit. And, you know, people get to listen to you. So if that's interesting to you, get it all in. And I will let you know on the 17th if we even how far it's gone and what we have and all that good stuff. So, having said all that, housekeeping out the way, put the broom back in the closet. Let's dive in. Kraven the Hunter's weekend is finished with $26 million. Big fucking nuclear bomb. Gigantic $110 million budget. It's one of the largest budgets that Sony has put on a Spider-Man universe film, live action anyway. I know they put a little bit into the other thing, into the Spider-Verse cartoon. But as far as a live action is concerned, 110 is the most they've put in a film that they put out by themselves. The only franchise out of that entire Spider-Man universe that has made any money on its own has been the Venom franchise. So, since they have this universe and they have the rights to it, they have been tapping into it. They've been trying to put things out and make money. Madam Web was a flop. Morbius was a flop. Kraven the Hunter seems to be the next one to take a large dump. The only thing that's made any serious cash, obviously, is Spider-Man in collaboration with Disney. Here's my thoughts on this. I think that Sony just simply doesn't care enough, and they don't know what the hell they're doing with what they have. And I think they're just spitting out movies just to keep the rights. I did see Madam Web. I fell asleep. The movie just made no sense. The movie was kind of cobbled together. Very, very much pacing issues, plot issues. Like it was almost as if they didn't care how this movie got done. Morbius was a complete departure from the character. Like they didn't even try to do anything with the source material. Venom is about as close as it gets to reality, and I think that's because of the actor that's attached to it. Tom Hardy really wants the authenticity as much as he can with the Eddie Brock character. I just feel like they need to figure out how to get this thing, either get it off the ground or just dump it entirely. They've already proven that they can't handle it, so maybe they should just get rid of it. I don't know. What do you guys think? Let me know in the comments. Here's where we're going to go with the sports. And it's this big thing, and I know I'm a little late to the ball game, but this has to do with the WNBA, and it has to do with Caitlin Clark and her white privilege comment and lifting up of black athletes and stuff. Now, I know a lot of the conservatives out there have lost their shit over this. There's a lot of left-leaning news sites and pundits that are kind of embracing it, saying, you know, there's nothing wrong with her wanting to uplift things and recognizing those who came before her into the WNBA, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm going to play something that this Mystics owner had said, and it's a 4-minute clip, and you need to hear it in its entirety. She is the owner of the Washington Mystics. Her name is Sheila Johnson. And the things that she says here are quite interesting, to say the least.
It has taken the WNBA almost 28 years to get to the point where we are now. And this year, something clicked with the WNBA. And it's because of the draft of the players that came in. It's just not Caitlin Clark. It's Reese. We have so much talent out there that has been unrecognized. And I don't think we can just pin it on one player.
There has been, this phrase has been couched, hasn't it? The Caitlin Clark effect. Why do you think that has been the case?
Well, I want to be very diplomatic about this. It's just the structure of the way media plays out race. I'm going to be very honest. I feel really bad because I've seen so many players of color that are equally as talented, and they never got the recognition that they should have. And I think right now it is time for that to happen. So last night we read Time Magazine where Caitlin Clark was named Athlete of the Year. Why couldn't they have put the whole WNBA on that cover and said the WNBA is the league of the year because of all the talent that we have? Because when you just keep singling out one player, it creates hard feelings. And so now you're starting to hear stories of racism within the WNBA. And I don't want to hear that. We have got to operate and become stronger as a league and respect everybody that's playing and their talents.
You mentioned Time Magazine.
Yes.
And Caitlin Clark has made a point of using that moment to say we need to celebrate the black players in the WNBA and what they have done, and credits them for being so much the foundation of the success of the league. How important is that? If it shouldn't have to be the case.
Yeah, she shouldn't have had to say that, but I applaud her for saying it. We cannot continue to operate because this division of racism is going to tear us apart.
Kathy Engelbert was criticized, wasn't she, for not being firmer in her condemnation of the racist abuse online suffered by the players. What was your reaction to how she dealt with that?
Well, I didn't want to think about it too much, but I think the players were right. She admitted that she made a mistake in the way she phrased it, and I just think she could have been a little bit more diplomatic and understanding of what the landscape of what's happening out there. Because the WNBA is at an inflection point where we're starting to really go up. And I don't want us to lose that momentum. What is happening now is perfect. But as I've also told many, many of our players, I said, this is just the canary in the coal mine. We have got to be careful, because we're now entering into a new political climate. We do not want to draw attention to ourselves in a negative way, to have anybody use it as ammunition against us as athletes.
How do you do that? What are your players saying to you about what they want to see happen?
We all need to sit down. And I think our leadership with our commissioner, she needs to sit down and even bring a psychologist in. I don't know. But talk to the players and how we resolve the issues that we're going through. Because not only what's going through with the WNBA is happening in society as well. We're seeing it more and more. From the Karens that you see on social media, this has got to stop.
Okay, so a couple of things with this. First, She doesn't want to applaud Caitlin Clark for getting on the magazine cover. She wants to dismiss it and automatically put the entire league, because she is saying that, it wasn't just her that made the WNBA this season, in terms of attendance and what have you. It was everybody. There's many more talents in the draft. The thing though with this is nobody came to see anybody else. That's the problem with the WNBA. Nobody gives a shit about this league. The players aren't talented enough, as much as she likes to say they are. They really are not. And this is just an example of an owner that is delusional. Just delusional. This league has been around for 27 seasons. It has lost $1.08 billion in cash. Just lost it. And the other issue is the NBA, the men's league, owns 50% of the WNBA. And they have been the owners of it since 1997. They have put in nearly $15 million per year to subsidize the losses of the WNBA. Do the math. $405 million has been given by the men's league to prop up the WNBA. So in 27 years, we can talk about Cheryl Swoops all we want. We can talk about Lisa, Leslie. We can talk about all of them. They did not put butts in the seats. And if they were that good, the women should support the women. And they should show up. And the arenas should be packed with women cheering on the women. But they didn't show up because they didn't give a shit either. This league is garbage. Nobody cared about it. And then comes along Caitlin Clark. Now, she's shooting the ball at, you know, from the three-point range. She's very similar to Steph Curry in that way. And she was just a highlight reel. And she comes in, and she puts butts in the seats. First time in 27 years, butts are in the seats. Packing out stadiums. Attendance numbers are rising. And she says she's talking about how she doesn't want any racism or any kind of bigotry, all this stuff. Every single woman that put on a uniform that was a person of color completely chastised her, attacked Caitlin Clark on the court and off the court with one racial slur after another. Caitlin Clark endured quite a bit in her rookie season, and I applaud her for not lashing out, not getting into violent altercations. Even her own teammates rarely helped her. And to hear this kind of garbage come out of Sheila Johnson's mouth is absolutely sickening. You know, for one, she should realize that she has something here, because she had to move both Indiana Fever games out of her arena into a gigantic arena because she could not sustain the attendance. They packed it out and then some. That was her highest numbers the entire year. So when you get things like this, and there's another silly thing down here from Carrie Champion. What she says is just mind-boggling. That statement right there is it was built in a way that nobody can watch it. That's because it sucked. That's because it was garbage. It was not successful, because the men didn't want to watch it. Have you seen a WNBA game? The talent level is, it's like when you watch a college basketball game with the women, they miss a lot of shots. There's a lot of transition. It is not a very good game to watch. It's very crazy. It's very insane. It's an insane thing to watch. You want to sit there and throw shit at the TV, watch a WNBA game. It's not crisp. It's not there. Now, fundamentally, they're better than the men. Fundamentally, we're talking about dribbling. We're talking about passing. We're talking about shooting form. But what they're not good at is putting the ball in the basket. It's astounding to me to watch. So this for her to sit here and to turn around and also say, you know, they built this league. What have they have built? What exactly? This thing has lost $1 billion in 27 years. It's propped up by the NBA at almost $405 million over 27 years. They are giving these guys nearly $20 million a year just to survive. I wouldn't shock me if they were doing that just to make payroll. They do not make money. Just this last year, even with the attendance, they lost $40 million. Maybe the new TV deal helps. Maybe the NBA gives a little more. I don't know how this league survives, but if this had been any normal business, these subsidies didn't exist, the WNBA would have folded 5 years into its existence. And that's just insane stuff. And then you got guys, you know, then you got guys like Tim Miller. Tim Miller, he's a news guy, and he just sort of reacts to other people's things on X and on YouTube, and what he does in this clip is he attacks Megyn Kelly for ridiculing Caitlin Clark for basically apologizing for being white, which she kind of does in that news magazine article. She does apologize for being white. She does sit there and although tries to uplift the black players, she in turn diminishes the white players in the league. And Megyn Kelly let her have it, as most of the conservatives have. And Tim Miller is just trolling, but what he says is kind of humorous, honestly.
Times Athlete of the Year, Caitlin Clark. Megyn Kelly writes, "Look at this. She's on the knee, all but apologizing for being white and getting attention. The self-flagellation. The, oh, please pay attention to the black players who are really the ones you want to celebrate. Condescending, fake, transparent, sad. You're sad, Megyn Kelly. You are the sad one. Let this woman be. I mean, like, why does Caitlin Clark have to hew to your political obsessions to get praised? Okay? Why can't you just let the basketball speak for itself? If you really cared about Caitlin Clark, why can't you just talk about her as a basketball player, which is what she wants to focus on? You just listen to her press conferences. She's not out there talking about this stuff all the time. She's not out there doing political campaign events, weighing in on all the stupid culture war issues of the day. She's not doing any of that. All she was saying was something simply obvious, that there are a lot of great black women's basketball players who haven't gotten the attention that she has, and it would be awesome to elevate them. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, that is well-intentioned. That's somebody that's demonstrating heart. She wasn't going out there, protesting, doing any of the woke social justice stuff you don't like. Like, she wasn't out there, like, campaigning against any, tearing down anybody that had different views. You're the one tearing people down, Megyn Kelly. You're the one that's trying to insult and trash her for your own experience. You're the one trying to step on the back of somebody with actual talent to get retweets for yourself.
What is Tim Miller doing? The exact same thing he is accusing Megyn Kelly of doing. It's just I played it not for what he says, but for what he's doing and how humorous it is. He is straight up doing the exact same thing that Megyn Kelly is doing. That, you know, he's accusing her of attacking Caitlin Clark for likes and clicks and shares and all that stuff, right? And what is he doing? Riding on the back of Megyn Kelly for likes, clicks, and shares. And he's talking about the back of talent. Tim Miller, I've been listening to him for a bit, watching him on debates. He is a hack if there ever was one. He doesn't have an ounce of talent to speak of. He rides on the back of anybody on X that'll get him a little bit further up the likes and shares and reposts. And he does the same thing on YouTube. This dude's podcast is garbage. It just is. If you listen to it, you're just going to pull your hair out because it's full of contradictions and it's just incoherent at times. And it's just laughable that this dude continues to exist and people continue to listen and elevate him. And I don't know why. There's nothing there that I can see that would warrant him elevating to where he is. So, I mean, it's another, let me put it to you this way. It is another sad, pathetic, left-wing internet troll getting notoriety and getting it big by attacking people far more talented and far more up the ladder than he is. He's just another one. It's absolutely irritating. All right, guys, let's get into some newsy news. Now, this is from KCRA3. There is a parking lot law that is going to remove 14,000 spots in California.
For many, finding a parking spot on the streets in San Francisco is a challenge.
I see it as an unfriendly city toward cars.
Susan Halperin says she drives in San Francisco at least 5 times a week. Her biggest issue?
Parking is getting harder and harder because they're taking away so many spaces as it is.
For people like her, it will continue to get harder. A new state law prohibits a driver from parking within 20 feet of a crosswalk. It's called daylighting, and SFMTA estimates it could remove around 14,000 parking spots in the city.
Daylighting intersections make it safer to cross the street for everybody. It also makes it safer for drivers to see if somebody's crossing the street, if another car driver is turning around a corner.
Luke Bornheimer with Streets Forward says this new law is a good thing for the city.
We want more people to be walking and biking and using scooters and mobility devices to get around, and this will help to address that.
The goal is to make it safer for pedestrians while they're crossing the streets. Drivers could be more aware of them. But the biggest question on everyone's mind in San Francisco is, where are you going to park?
The law went into effect this year, but delayed enforcement until this January. SFMTA has already begun issuing warnings, which will eventually become $40 tickets.
So I parked just like this car right here, and I came back to my car, and there was, which I thought was a citation, but it wasn't a citation. It said 000. So I was very scared. I was confused. I was worried.
Another question from drivers is, how are they going to tell if they're getting too close? SFMTA has painted red lines around some crosswalks, but according to the San Francisco Chronicle, the city doesn't have enough money to paint all of them.
Okay, so if you're in California, kids, you are in trouble. Do not park within 20 feet of a crosswalk starting in January anywhere in the state of California, but specifically in San Francisco, they are going to lose 14,000 parking spots just by doing that. And the stinking city doesn't have enough money to even paint those areas red or put any kind of markings to tell you that these spaces are not for your car. Now, not only are we going to lose nearly 100,000 parking spots from the entire state just by that alone, this is not the only city that is going to have problems in their budget in terms of, you know, painting things red, blocking certain areas off so that the drivers know. Now, is it a safe law? Sure, it allows cars to see around corners a little bit better. There are people that'll be able to cross a little safer, things like that. But overall, this is just a hilarious law. Because no city has the budget to implement this law. Because the state of California doesn't have any fucking money. But we still keep passing laws that are just absolutely dumb as a whole. It just is. And that's all I can say, guys. There's 14,000 spots you're going to lose in San Francisco. You're going to lose 100,000 spots over the state of California as a whole. Good luck parking your car when it comes time to head off to Disneyland and all that shit. Okay, guys. The Vatican is on the brink of bankruptcy. They are struggling to meet its pension obligations after a sharp decline in revenue. A significant factor to the crisis is the dramatic drop in donations from the Catholic churches around the world and from the public at large. Many churches have withdrawn their support, disillusioned by the ongoing reforms under Pope Francis, who is a Jesuit. I'm not high on the religion knowledge to know a whole lot about stuff like this, but I think it's interesting to report that the Vatican is about to go under. That's all this really is, guys. It's really just weird that this is going to be the fall of the Catholic Church if it continues. Okay, guys. Here's a video I saw that I just want to talk about and respond to. And it's a guy that is talking really well about Japan. And I got to say, you know, if you love your country, go ahead. But let's have some fun.
What the U.S. can learn from Japan. People waiting patiently. Suitcases waiting patiently. Trash bags waiting patiently. Trash bags with nets to prevent rats. Please learn, New York City. On-time trains. Fast trains. Reversible seats on trains. Barriers to prevent train deaths. Please learn, New York City. Cheap groceries. Cheap alcohol. Cheap unvandalized vending machines. Cheap restaurants with no tipping. Please learn, America. Toilets that greet you. Toilets with instructions. Toilets that are public and clean. Please learn, America. Competing boy bands versus girl groups. Singing microwaves. Creamia. Temple Fest. Hells yeah, Temple Fest. Shoes off in house. Shoes off at Temple Fest. Less chance of getting murdered. Please learn.
You know, I love when other countries attack the U.S. the way that they do. And Japan is right up there. The United States spends nearly $1.2 trillion since 2000 on defense spending in Japan. Japan has a very small military force. They call it a self-defense force. They don't exactly engage in major wars because they don't exactly have enough to not only mount an offensive, but have a defense. So the United States, since World War II, as a whole, has been their, you know, military, their defense. So when you aren't spending trillions of dollars on defense, thank you. You should say thank you, America, instead of learn, America. It gives you the opportunity to have clean toilets and trash bags and cheap bullshit food and silly ass vending machines with garbage liquid in it. And not only that, $3 beer, that I question how good that beer actually is. That's just me. The only thing I could take out of that entire video is the blockades from the train so you don't die. I can deal with that. Reversible chairs, who gives a shit? Trains being on time, I don't deal with that because I have a car and I go where the fuck I want because America is awesome. Here's a video for funsies. I'm just going to play it and, you know, get into it.
Capitalism is bad. I don't like it.
Yeah, really easy for someone to say that grew up in a really nice house in one of the best school districts in Texas.
I know, but it's...
Who has the rent paid for that is able to go to Europe and on a whim with their sister, who's able to do girl math, who's able to be fun employed. Yeah, it's easy to say that the system's bad when you're doing that because you've never had to work for it. You never got to actually see what happens when you put in the work and get benefits and actually have a little bit of responsibility and actually build something or do anything. You've grew up in privilege beyond privilege beyond privilege beyond privilege. It's only the people who speak like you that grew up in a world where you've never had to do a single thing in your life. So I don't want to hear about that. What a joke.
I'm sorry. I just wish everybody had like...
I wish a lot of things. Wishing doesn't get people places. You try to create the best systems possible. This doesn't matter. Oh my...
that's fun. That's Caleb Hammer's podcast. He does money management, and he tries to help people with their money. And he ran into a lady that was absolutely privileged, had everything handed to her, and she comes out like that, and he slapped the shit out of her. And I agree wholeheartedly with it. If you have never worked for anything in your life, if you have never tried to do anything, you're never going to know what it is to complete something or to accomplish something. And that to me is all fulfilling. It makes you whole to know that you did that. And when you have everything handed to you, it really hits you in the face when you can't get something done. And that's what's happened to that lady. And he let her have it, and good on him. Let's dive into the end of our show here, the PlayStation, and why I fucking hate this piece of shit. And it is a bane of my existence. This thing... I don't know why. Let's back up. I know why the PlayStation is one of the top two, is because they put Blu-ray players into all the PlayStation 2s, and they fucking flooded the market and just eliminated any Blu-ray company out there. And then they decided when they challenged them to, when they challenged Nintendo, their games weren't very good, but they flooded it with so much in terms of it can play movies, it can do, you know, that they took the market in that way. But as time has passed, it is almost like they've gotten lost. And I since the PlayStation 2, Sony has been an absolute dumpster fire, in my opinion. The systems have constantly had hardware limitations. They're not as powerful as a high-end PC. They don't even perform to the level of the Xbox, which is made by a computer company, Microsoft, and it just doesn't have the same graphical power. It has never been able to compete, in my opinion, in that way. These things are a visual disaster. They also have issues when it comes to exclusive titles. They're not as appealing. I mean, they got God of War and they've got that, but there's nothing else that I can think of. And their online service is garbage, is all shit. There's always stability issues. There's always security problems. It's a frustrating thing for if you're an online gamer. One of the issues the consoles have always had is backwards compatibility. It's been fixed as of late with the PlayStation 4 and the PlayStation 5, but as a whole, not every game you're able to play on the newer systems. It's kind of the similar issue that the Xbox has had, but there's been some games that have just been unbelievably trash. Back in 2006, with Sonic the Hedgehog, had numerous glitches and poor controls. Godzilla back in 2014... was criticized for its repetitive gameplay, poor graphics. It had numerous bugs. Tony Hawk back in Pro Skater 5 in 2015. It was criticized for outdated graphics, poor level of design, Bugsby 3D. It's also terrible controls, bad level design, lack. It wasn't polished. There's just so many. Kung Fu Rider back in 2010. Was one of the earlier attempts at motion controls for the PlayStation 3, but it was also criticized for frustration in gameplay and controls. And the most insane thing was back in 2021 with the Bilin Wonder World. It was it, it was plagued by numerous issues. It was poor controls, lackluster story, monster glitching in that game. It was just a terrible display of a long list of titles that come out for the PlayStation that just don't live up to the hype. I played Madden on the PlayStation 4, and that was just a graphical nightmare. Arms and legs would disappear and come back. They'd run into the other players and freeze. The ball would get stuck in the air. There was just and the commentary was repetitive. It would say the same three or four lines in a row when that issue wasn't actually happening on the field. There's so much of that going on. And why do the graphics fall short? Well, I mean, I think it's technical limiting, the budget constraints, because, the smaller studios just don't have the resources, but somehow they get on a PlayStation. I will say that design choice, probably developers prioritizing controls over graphics, but it just becomes unplayable when you can't see anything. The cross-platforming has improved over the last couple of series of the 4 and the 5, but overall, that's been an issue, just getting onto servers. The problems with the PlayStation, in my opinion, are endless, and the problems will probably never get fixed. What are your guys' thoughts about the PlayStation versus Xbox? What do you guys prefer, and am I wrong in what it is that I've said? Now, obviously, I have a lot of notes on it. I did a little bit of research, so I was reading some bullet points and stuff, but my overall opinion has always been garbage, 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 and it is never improved. It has been a visual disaster. The gameplay has always been trash. I have never been able to sit down in front of a Sony for more than an hour without throwing my controller and walking away. And it's been, whether it's been on a display at an electronics store, or whether it's at someone's house, I can't get through it without just dropping the controller and saying, fuck this, and walking off. It doesn't matter what fucking game it is. It doesn't matter how long, it just doesn't matter. And when you go back and you play the PlayStation 1, you really understand just how bad it is compared to the Nintendo 64 from a CD to a cartridge. Even the Sega Saturn at that time was leaps and bounds better than the PlayStation. The only reason Sony has survived is because when the PlayStation 2 came out, they flooded the market with Blu-ray players and pushed out other competitors, forcing everybody, for the most part, to buy a fucking PlayStation 2 just to play movies, and they ended up selling some games in the process. They've never fixed their network. It's still a god-awful mess. That's my opinion, guys. That's episode 82. If you have a different opinion, let me know in the comments, and I'll see you on the next one. Later!